Well, folk, 2 days to the end of the month, and the countdown to Christmas has begun. So if you've been to any of the garden centers or shops, you will already see Christmas decorations up, and already shops are gearing up for the retail deluge time of Christmas. And perhaps you are already thinking or have bought Christmas presents. Since coming back to England, I've been amazed at how early in the year people start their Christmas shopping. And of course, Christmas has got lots of associations. But one of those associations is that the end of the year is nigh. So a week after Christmas, it will be the end of 2017. And 2017 will be gone forever. And we'll start with 2018. And I wonder if you do some reflection at the end of 2017 and you look back, what 2017 will have meant for you as you look to the end of the year. We face multiple endings in our lives. And so the service in a few minutes will come to an end. Perhaps you're hoping that will be soon. I don't know. This day will come to an end and we'll go to bed. And we'll wake up tomorrow morning and the night will have come to an end. And so we go on and we go to work tomorrow, some of us, and then the work day will come to an end. So things are ending all the time. And of course, there's some good things that we kind of wish wouldn't end. You know, we go on a fabulous holiday and we say, oh, we've got to go home now and face the rat race in London or whatever. We sort of kind of wish it wouldn't end because it's so good. You know, it's kind of sad for it to end. Good things, okay? Those of you who are football fans, all right, or cricket fans, you know, or rugby fans, or whatever sport it is, you know, but let's talk about football. You go to a match and you're all excited about your team. But of course, your emotions will be determined by the end of that match, won't it? You know, so if you're a Crystal Palace supporter and your team wins, well, you come home saying, rah, you know. But if your team loses, you know, to some minor team like Arsenal or Manchester City, then of course you won't be too happy. And the ending is kind of good or bad, isn't it? But you know, it gets more serious than that because in life there are some, or there may be some lovely things like a lovely time with family or a holiday or a fabulous show or something that has to come to an end. There are some, if you like, bad things, difficult things that we wish would come to an end. And we wonder in these struggles, will they ever end? Or is this the end? Now, why is that? And the first point I want to make, folk, is that the reason for that is we live in a broken world. And the peak of God's creation is humanity. That's you and me. So we look at all this beauty in this world, where we see beauty, and we think, wow, we think of this beautiful autumn time, we look at the leaves, we go to beautiful places, we see magnificent things, we see a butterfly, we just see beautiful things, think, wow, God created this. But the peak of God's creation is humanity, you and me. And he created us perfectly. Garden of Eden. But then humans disobeyed. And you know the story of Adam and Eve. And as a result of their disobedience and their sin, God said, you can have everything here, folk. You can have everything. Just don't touch that tree. But Satan came and said, What's this? Don't touch that tree. Do you think God knows everything? Come on, don't be stupid. And they sinned, and they were banished from the Garden of Eden. And ever since then, humanity has been broken. What do you mean? Well, to start with, their relationship with God was broken. And their condition of being in perfection was broken. And do we really need to look far to see evidence of brokenness all around us? In relationships, in bodies, in politics, in all sorts of things, there's brokenness. People that are addicted, people that are circumstantially depressed. There's brokenness all over. Now, I wonder when the last time was that you had some article at home that got broken and you threw it away, turfed it out, finished. A couple of months ago, I had a printer, a lovely Canon printer. It looked fantastic on the outside, but the fact is that it was broken on the inside. And it was going to cost virtually as much to repair it as to buy another one. I remember taking it to the tip, and it so happened that the tip I go to had been refurbished, and there were brand new big bins there. You know those huge big tip bins? And I took this printer, and I dropped it into the bin. There was nothing else there. It hit the bottom. Crash, spinkle pieces. Okay? So I had to get rid of this thing. It was a broken article. Now, of course, we do live in a bit of a throwaway society. And we tend sometimes to throw away things that we don't need to throw away. And there's some things that can be fixed. And in fact, you and I can fix them. So about a year ago or so, I had a computer monitor that was flickering and doing all sorts of things. I looked up on the internet and I thought, I'm going to fix this. So I did. I pulled it apart, soldered the right things together, and I fixed it. All right? One can do those things. But sometimes things are broken beyond repair. I wanted to bring something this morning, but I couldn't find it in the garage, and I wonder if I'd maybe thrown it away. But it was an oil can. And you know, this oil can, my dad gave to me. And I wouldn't be surprised if his dad had given it to him. It's an ancient old oil can, lovely red oil can, but it works so well. It had a pump mechanism. Any of you remember seeing those at all? Okay. But you know, I thought I need to use that. I hadn't used it for ages. So I took it out, but it was clogged. So I thought, well, I'll just clean it out. So I took it apart, tried to take it apart. What I didn't know, of course, what I didn't realize, was where that nice thumb lever was, which pumped the oil so nicely, worked with a spring inside with two tiny ball bearings on each end. And as I pulled it apart, bing, the one ball bearing went flying off and I couldn't find it. So I thought, where on earth am I going to find a ball bearing exactly that size without hunting around and maybe buying a bag of 100, which I don't need? So that oil can came to the end of its life. It was broken, if you like, beyond repair. Now, what if, folk, what if you had some appliance, some article at home that was broken and it was fixable? They could put another part into it and fix it. But the only people that could repair that appliance was the manufacturers. And in order to get it fixed, but nobody in the world can fix it, but the manufacturer. And in order to get it fixed, you've got to take it to the manufacturer. But there is such a high price that virtually nobody can repair it. I mean, nobody can afford it. So what do you do with it? Say, well, I'll just have to discard it. I'll have to throw this away because only the manufacturer can fix it and nobody, I can't afford to have it fixed. And you know, that is actually the story of humanity. We are broken people, and as Anne pointed out to us, the only person that can fix us is the Creator, who's God. And this, the older I get, the more amazed I am at the story of the Gospel. That the God who created this magnificent, beautiful universe perfectly and put humanity into a perfect situation, and then it got broken, we got broken, came in the flesh as Jesus to show us the way, to pay that unpayable price to fix what he had created and offer that repair to the world, because he rose again from death. And it's amazing that then he chose 12 guys, 11 of which carried on, well, they replaced the one chap with the 12th, and gave them his power by his spirit, equipped them, and then they multiplied the repairing business for centuries. And you and I, if you know Jesus, are, if you like, trophies and evidence of that repairing process. Now, we're not perfect, because as Anne pointed out in that wonderful children's story she gave, it takes a while. And the Bible says that God is at work in us to will and to work for his good pleasure. And though our outward natures are fading away, our inner natures are being renewed every day. Think of the pumpkin. The more muck that comes out, the more light can shine. Now you might say, now, hang on, aren't we talking about the end? Well, haven't you gone off track here? Well, I wanted to start by just saying the reason, and we need to get this in our minds when things get tough, the reason for the struggles and the difficulties and the brokenness is because of the really difficult times you sometimes have is because of the brokenness that God is willing to restore. And that brokenness can be in relationships, with health, with all sorts of difficult circumstances, and with all sorts of challenges. But Jesus warned us of this, and he gave us words of encouragement. So in John chapter 14, we read, "Peace I give to you. My peace I leave with you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." And in chapter 16, "And I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace." And listen to this. "In this world you will have trouble." Anybody here never had any trouble? No? Of course not. "In this world you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world." You might just come to me because you might be a keen environmentalist and said, "Ivan, you said the world is broken." Yes, we're broken, but the world is broken? Well, actually, yes, it is broken in a lot of parts, because as you know, we have even environmental problems all over the place with pollution and climate change and all sorts of things. So as a result of human actions, we are breaking this beautiful world in many ways. That's God's perfection that's been broken. But he is good, and one day he will restore it all. And so let's secondly just go on to people who experienced brokenness in our readings this morning. Now, in the psalm that David read for us, Psalm 77, here we have the psalmist crying out and saying, "Lord, those wonderful days of the past seem to have gone. Things are really tough now. I just can't get comforted. When on earth is this going to end? Where are you, God?" Think of Jairus. And by the way, of course, that psalm ends on a positive note. He says, "God, yes, I know you are around, and you will come to my rescue." And then think of Jairus. Here he is, at the end of his tether. Doctors can't help. He's a fairly well-to-do guy. He's tried everything, no doubt. He comes to Jesus. Jesus, will you come? My daughter's very ill. He's at the end. So Jesus starts to go with him, and then there's an interruption. There's a woman who's had an issue of blood for 12 years. Can you imagine how weak and ill she would have been? She'd spent all her money on the doctors, and none of them could help her. So she decides, as a last resort, I will go, and this man Jesus who's traveling around, if I can just touch his robe. Now that's faith. Now in Israel, where Di and I were recently, there's a beautiful church in Migdal. And they've got the main church, but there's a few chapels around. And the one chapel they've dug out of rock in the basement has got this beautiful mural. And I thought I would just show it to you because it says so much. I'm sorry I haven't got it close up. But if you look carefully beyond the little stand there, you will see, thank you, that's wonderful. Oh, that's great. Thank you, Anthony. You will see feet of a whole lot of people. And there's Jesus' robe with the stripes on it. And there's a woman's hand just reaching through, way down. If I can just touch the hem of his robe. Isn't that beautiful? So somebody painted that beautiful big mural. And so she touches the hem of his robe. And instantly, Jesus' power is in her and she's healed. The bleeding stops. Jesus says, who touched me? Come on, says the disciples, who touched you? Give us another one. There are people crowding around you all the time. No, no, said Jesus. I felt power go out of me. Somebody touched me. And the woman comes forward. What did he say to her? He said, woman, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. Wonderful. But there's somebody standing on the side. Somebody standing on the side saying, well, Jesus, just come. My daughter's really sick. And in that time, somebody comes and says, don't bother the teacher. Daughter's died. She's gone. No worries, says Jesus. Let's keep going. Thanks, Anthony. And so, he goes, the mourner's already there weeping. And this must really be the end for Jairus. This precious little girl, my daughter, is gone. Jesus didn't get here in time. Jesus sends the people out and he says to the little girl, stand up. Talitha kum. Joe read that so nicely for us. And she got up. Wow. Changed that whole family circumstances. One story we didn't read was Lazarus. Lazarus is sick. He's a good friend of Jesus. His two sisters are followers of Jesus. He'd changed one of his sisters radically. They send a message. Lazarus, your friend is sick. He's a long way away. He's a long way away. He's 2 days away. At least. And so he says to his disciples, we'll wait a bit. Deliberately. We'll wait a bit. What? Wait? The man's really ill. You know, you need to be calling 911. You know, this is urgent stuff. We'll wait a bit. There we go. See? And then he says to his disciples, Lazarus is asleep. Oh, they said, well, that means he's going to get better. If he's sleeping, he'll get better. No, no, he's dead. So then, let's go. So they get there, he's really dead for 4 days. The mourners are all there. The two sisters, one after the other, come out and say, Lord, if you'd been here. They said the same words to him. Lord, if you'd been here, he wouldn't have died. How many times have you said to God, if you had just been around, if you had just done something, don't you care? And so, Jesus comes. He sees their brokenness. What does he do? Shortest verse in the Bible. Know what it is? Jesus wept. Now you say, well, how did Jesus weep if he knew what was going to happen? He wept. Remember, he said to his disciples, I'm going to do this to show you, this is for your sake, you guys. This is for your sake. I'm going to show you something through this. All right? So he waits. Lazarus dies. The people say, Lord, if you'd just been here. He weeps with them. I want you to remember that, folk, that he weeps with you when you're brokenhearted. And then he calls Lazarus out. And this guy who's been dead and stinky for 4 days comes out all wrapped up in the grave clothes. And he says to the people, unwrap him and let him go. And of course, finally, the disciples, when Jesus was crucified, kind of ended for them. I want you to put yourself in their position. 3 years they'd followed him. They'd seen him do the most amazing things, including they would have seen him call Lazarus and the little girl that he raised from the dead, and the son of the woman of Nain, who he raised from the dead, and all the demons he cast out of how many thousands of people, and the sicknesses he healed. He'd seen all this, and then he sees him get unjustly condemned to die. A robber gets freed in his place. He gets put on the cross. And it's all over. Now, they would have been either saying, this is the end, or perhaps saying, well, is this the end? And so they all go off and tell the good news, which they didn't believe at first, that Jesus actually had risen from the dead. Folk, finally, what about me? What about my situation? And I want to just say to you this morning, have there been times, or is there a time now? There may well be times that come in the future when you feel that you're at the end of something. Or the end has come, or it's coming to an end. Good things. It could be a relationship. It could be a job. It could be a bank account that's coming to an end. It could be a health issue, and you're feeling somewhat desperate. And that's how the people in the stories we read this morning felt. We read it in perspective. We think, oh, what a lovely story. Put yourself into that woman's shoes 6 years before she met Jesus. How do you think she was feeling? 3 years before she met Jesus. It's getting worse. 11 years before she, 3 years, 1 year before she met Jesus. How do you think she was feeling? But there was and still is Jesus. Otherwise, we would not be here in this building today. You realize that? We'd be wasting our time, wouldn't we? I want to tell you a story about a little boy back in South Africa. True story. Many years ago, we knew somebody, and he liked hunting in the wintertime. Wintertime is the hunting season. And so way up in the north of South Africa, there's an area called the Bushveld. And a lot of game farms and hunting goes on there. This is probably 30 years ago. And this one day, this man we know, and his friend, I can't remember if it was his friend or his brother, they were going out hunting, And they left early in the morning, and that day he took his little boy of 6 or 7 with him. So the three of them head out, they go out in their little truck and park, and then they're heading for a valley where they know there will be a lot of what you would call here deer, but in South Africa we call them buck, all different types of buck. I'm sure you've heard of the spring buck and all sorts of buck. So that's where they were pretty sure there would be some game to shoot. And so here they go, and they get to a place, and they're just approaching a ridge going down to the valley, and they father says to his son, listen, you stay behind us. Just stay a few meters behind us now, obviously for safety reasons. And so they get a good view, and it doesn't get in the way, and so on. So you just stay a few meters behind us. So there they're walking along through the grass. It's the dawn is hardly broken, so it's still sort of a twilight. And somehow I think this little boy got distracted by something, and suddenly there was nobody there. There was nobody there. He couldn't see his dad. He couldn't see his uncle. He looks around. He's in the middle of nowhere. He doesn't know where he is. His dad and his uncle said to him, quiet now. We're approaching the valley. But he got distracted. He's walking along. There's total silence. And he is terrified. And he shouts, Daddy! And it echoes across the valley. And his father and uncle popped their heads over the ridge where they just disappeared and crouched to, and said, what's the matter with you? Well, as you can imagine, there wouldn't be much game left in that valley after that piercing scream. But you see, for a moment, his dad was with him. Just over there. And the next moment, he was gone. There was nobody to be seen anywhere. But his dad was just over the ridge. And very often that's our situation with God. When Jesus on the cross said, it is finished. Tetelestai. This is the end. What was he saying? He said, the payment for sin is finished. But the people around thought, that's him, he's finished, he's gone, he's dead. It's all over. For some, they were saying, thank goodness this stupid teacher that's causing ructions around here is finished. And the Pharisees were rubbing their hands. But the disciples, the people who loved him, went away with their heads drooping. What about the people around you? We live in a secular country. There are now more people who identify themselves as non-religious, as religious in this country, which has such a great Christian heritage. So there are many people around that think, thank goodness this God thing is getting scrubbed out of the place here, you know. Causes too much hassles. But you and I who know Jesus drop our heads and we think, oh God, this country that was a great country that was built on Christian tradition is just turning away from you. But God isn't finished. He's not finished. And so in conclusion, I just want to say to you, Paul in his letter to the Romans, to the Corinthians, to the Colossians, to the Thessalonians, and to Timothy, and to Titus, spoke about the need for endurance on the part of the saints. And in Revelation we read, this calls for patient endurance on the part of the people of God, who keep his commands and remain faithful to Jesus. You have need of endurance. Phil has been talking about God's Word and the importance of reading God's Word. And I'm going to read to you now a short psalm to close off with that was my reading this morning. Psalm 126. When the Lord brought back the captives to Zion, we were like men who dreamed. Our mouths were filled with laughter, our tongues with songs of joy. Then it was said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us. We are filled with joy. Restore our fortunes, O Lord, like the streams in the Negev. You know what the Negev is? It's a desert. Restore our fortunes like restoring streams in the Negev that are dried up. Those who sow in tears will reap with songs of joy. He who goes out weeping, carrying seed to sow, will return with songs of joy, carrying sheaves with him. And the comment in the little booklet I use to do my daily readings says this: we do not want the tears, we want the joy. We certainly want to move from one to the other, from drought to abundant water, as verse 4 puts it. The journey from one to the other may be a long path, but we need to sow before we reap. We must persist and endure while knowing the outcome is secure. As the people look back, they rejoice. As they look forward, they're driven to their knees in prayer. Much to give thanks for, but as it were, much land still to be possessed. I want to encourage you to do something if you're feeling in a place like that, or if you ever do. I could have given you summaries of these stories, but it would have just extended things. You can do it. Go onto YouTube, and all you have to type in the search area is stories of restoration. Just type in something like stories of restoration and see how many people will tell you that they were absolutely at the end, in prison, in drug addiction, in a marriage breakup, in a close relative, husband or wife's, or son or daughter, or mother or father's loss, devastated in some way or another, and how God, in his loving kindness, brought them restoration. And you will find that in many of those stories, they mention the power of God's word. And I end with this verse in Psalm 119. Great peace have those who love your law, and nothing can make them stumble. If you think you're at the end, you aren't, because Jesus is still there. Maybe I said I'd close it. Maybe I'll tell you one personal story. 9 years ago, in 3 months, if you like, I didn't have a job. I'd been back in this country 3 years. I'd been teaching. That teaching contract came to an end. I said to the Lord, Lord, I just cannot face going back into supply teaching on a daily basis. I really can't face it anymore. I just don't know how I could cope with it. We went away on holiday. I went away with nothing to come back to. And I remember walking through a forest in Norway, where we were, seeing friends, saying, Lord, is this the end? Are you going to take me home now? Have I come to the end of my life now? You know, it's maybe, you might say, a silly emotional response, but I just thought, where do I go from here? How many people know me here? You know, my CV is mostly South African. Where do we go from here? Is this the end, Lord? I really said that. Not a few days after we got back, I got a phone call. Within 2 weeks of me coming back, I had a really good job. Well-paid job. Jesus was there when I thought the end had come. Remember, there'll be prayer afterwards if you want it. God bless you.